following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Hello and welcome to Corolla Classics for July 5th, 2020, the show where we highlight the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show. Got some clips ready for you. My name's Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Corolla archivist, superfan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Gio. Let's get going with some clips. I'm excited. This first one features one of Adam's comedic heroes, Albert Brooks.
Yeah, this one was a real gem of an episode. He had a book coming out at the time, which I still haven't read, which I probably should. I remember Mike Lynch read it. I think Adam heard the audiobook, or Lynch gave him the cliff notes.
Yeah, Mike Lynch, who co-wrote Adam's book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, also...
Everybody listening to this knows who Mike Lynch is. Come on.
Okay, I'm just... I want to reset every once in a while. Also went to this interview, and if you ask Mike who was the guest that you've been starstruck by the most, it is Albert Brooks.
Oh, absolutely. This is a great interview. They brought the mountain to Muhammad, and they taped there. They used the lav mics. The audio's been improved the best it can be. Albert was a great sport to this day. I think it's still his longest form podcast interview, if not his only. I think maybe Chris Harwick got him years later, but nothing compares to this one. He's a great one-on-one. And technically, Mike Lynch is there. I think August is also there, but they're not really much on Mike.
And speaking of the phone... I have found that that a cell phone only really counts as sort of half a phone call to the people that are interrupting you. Meaning, if you're sitting in your office and you're holding a phone up and it's got a cord on it and you're having a conversation and somebody walks into your office, they give a hup and then they give a sorry and they'll point at their watch or do 1 minute
right.
or something
it's
and they back out. I've been at the gas station talking on a cell phone and have people come, hey, man show. And I do the, so I'm on a cell phone. Hey, when are you and Jimmy going to get back together again and do, and I'm having a conversation,
but
it doesn't really
and
count.
Why?
No,
because
no
why
is cord.
The, because the places with the cord, they can't come.
Oh.
You're going to them with a cell phone.
Yeah.
If you took your corded phone to a gas station, they'd say the same thing.
So you're saying if I took my phone...
It's the place where the cords are. There's your last semblance
right.
of privacy.
Or invited them into your...
2030, the real story of what happens to America. I just
yes.
had to edit it. Anyway,
no,
go
it's good. And you go to adamcarolla.com, and then we have a link up there for Albert's book. And now...
No, your audience would like this book.
Oh, they will.
And I God spoke to me, and I know what's going to happen in 20 years. It's not just my conjecture. I know what's going to happen.
A lot of the stuff is really interesting and makes a lot of sense. And one of the topics Albert touches on is the fact that, you know, when people all live to 95 years of age, it seems great for the individual, but what about the society? I always felt this way about smokers when everyone was like, you know, Rob Reiner was like, we got to charge another $5 a pack because of the money it costs
you were thinking,
society.
Just let him die?
What I thought, when my grandfather, when he was 70 years old or 65 years old, he was a smoker. And the doctor said, you don't quit smoking, you're going to have a massive heart attack and die. He had a heart attack. He said, you don't quit smoking, you're going to have another heart attack and you're going to die. And he quit smoking, and he lived to about 94, 95, and must have cost us $10 million his last 6 years on the planet, back and forth to Kaiser in Panorama City. And I thought, as a grandson, I'm glad he's around, but as a taxpayer, I wish he would have kept up the smoking and just had a massive coronary at 70.
Well, bless her heart. If I read one more story about Zsa Zsa Gabor going back into the hospital,
sure.
I think she died two
Hold
years
on.
Ago.
What's up? It's a little joke we planned.
I think that she died 2 years ago, and that Prince husband
right.
just has to keep this going to get in the paper. Because she can't, I can't, you know, I see it on Yahoo, I see the name. Okay, this must be the dead. Click. Zsa Zsa Gabor now lost two legs and one arm.
Right.
You know, she has a massive infection. Prince Anhalt says she may not be able to go home. And she goes home for a month. Then she's rushed back in. Now she has no limbs and no head.
Yes.
It's just a heaving, breathing breast, and Prince Anhalt says she may not make it. Jesus Christ. So you talk about $10 million.
Yes.
And by the way,
she's a knight from a Monty Python movie.
How did Jascha Gabor even get like we're talking about her? There's not even a movie anyone can name. It's not like Elizabeth Taylor. Where did Jascha Gabor? And they keep putting that picture of her when she's 20. She wasn't even on Green Acres.
Right,
she
was Ava.
She was on the, I've Got a Secret. I just think it's so funny. All the people on Yahoo see that name.
It'll be awesome.
Oh, my God. Hey, Dad, Jascha Gabor is back in the hospital.
And, well, it'll be great when they go to you for comment after she does die and you do 20 minutes. Well, I don't even know who she is. What did she invent something?
Yeah,
is there something that she did that I'm aware of?
They're going to come to me for comments.
Nice.
I'll give my comment now. They can take it from your podcast. It's a sad day when the last of the Gabor sisters has finally gone.
Yes. The prince.
Her husband, something's wrong with that guy.
Well, or no, I'm telling you, right.
No, I'm telling you. She's been dead for 3 years.
He's
trying to keep his business up.
What if she did slap a cop in 89?
That's right. But
she's famous for that.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I like him because he wears the burnt orange turtlenecks with the medallion on the outside of the turtleneck and really just looks like a European cartoon character. Like, I mean, he looks like something.
Didn't he claim to be the father of what's his name and the baby?
when there was that, I don't know if it's an Octomom thing or something.
No. What was it? It was just recently where he said he was the father of...
somebody was pregnant. Nobody knew who the dad was, and he threw his cock in the ring.
Right. Prince Anhalt. I'm the father.
Yeah, he's a publicity whore.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, she's dead.
He's definitely dead.
No, I'm 3 years ago. I went to her funeral.
Really?
No, he wheels in an empty cart to Reagan and pays the money to say Zsa Zsa's back in the hospital.
It is, yeah, well, the point is this. If she had just kept chain smoking, she would have died in 1963, and we would not be footing the bill for this.
Well, we are going to keep people alive, and I mean, and so in the book, cancer is cured, which is a good thing, but, you know, what I've always thought is that Newton's law is never applied to actual things. They only apply it to, like, physics.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you cure cancer, and then what's the reaction to that?
Right.
You cure disease, you have all these people living, and of course, you know, one of the themes of the book is the young and old revolution that I think is coming, and I do think it's coming. I think young people are going to, they're going to just not going to take it anymore. It's going to be, because right now when you hear about these ideas floated about Medicare, we have to cut Medicare, they always say, but not anyone who's old.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you're 10, you're going to be in trouble, but the 60-year-olds are okay.
Sure.
So all of these future cuts are coming out of children.
Right.
Who I think when they wake up and realize it, they're going to get pissed.
Well, I have this theory that sounds a little bit harsh, but you can tell me if you agree or disagree.
Bubonic plague?
It's connected to it, yeah. You know, whenever they do those movies where they say, all right, someone builds a time machine,
yeah,
and they go, when you go back in time, you can't disturb anything. You can't touch anything.
Right.
Because, by the way, I'd be like, then fuck it. I'm not going back because I got to fuck with stuff. Otherwise, I'm not going back. But,
right.
But they do.
You could go back in time, and then if you could, you couldn't touch anything.
Right.
If
you disturb anything, it might.
By the way, I can't stand time machine movies.
They're cop-out movies.
I can't stand it. It makes no sense to me.
Well, what about movies like this? Or you tell me this, and then I'll get back to that. But it drives me nuts when there's a premise that's wildly false, which is, hey, Jim Carrey is a asinine lawyer who basically, you know, he mistreats women and clients alike, and then one day he has to tell the truth. He cannot stop telling the truth. And you go, hey, well, that's interesting, but why?
What is that? I mean, that's good.
What would Oh, you never heard of this one?
No.
Liar, liar?
Oh, that sounds funny.
Oh, come on. Okay. The point is this. So you go, well, why is it? Well, his son makes a wish on his
well, every,
birthday.
Come on. Half no, the movies made in America are based on children making wishes.
Well, I don't like
the body,
that.
The body changing, I wish I was that, I wish I was that.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
No, I mean, it's called fantasy.
All right. What about this? Tell me, I'll give you a semi-grim thought. Speaking of, in a way, a modern-day version of what you're talking about regarding, you know, curing cancer and everyone living to 100. So, and my time machine theory, which I got from watching movies, which is we are altering the course of things, and we have to be careful what we ask for. And we, for instance, drop off millions of metric tons of grain to Africa every year and mosquito nets and all kinds of stuff, basically attempting to keep people alive who are essentially killing themselves through overpopulation and disease and many other societal problems.
So we should kill them.
Not kill them.
Just don't help them.
Maybe we should let them die out, and then maybe the next generation would have learned from those mistakes.
I don't know. I don't think you can do that.
Too morbid a thought?
Yeah.
Too rough?
I mean, if you really want to...
Yeah.
Are you sort of serious about this?
I'm sort of serious, yeah.
You got to send food, but something else will happen. The population won't be allowed to grow as it is. It just won't. Nature won't allow it.
Well, trying not to allow it, but we're intervening. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I know, but we're not intervening enough to... we're not keeping the population growing by sending the rice to the people in Africa.
Well, how about some condoms?
You know, you'd have to... Well, but by the way, you know, look at the Middle East. There's, I think, 60% of that population is under 20. And it, or maybe that's not the right number, but it's a huge number, and it's growing. People have many children there. That's not Africa.
Right.
That, you know, in the Middle Eastern countries, the population's going crazy, and that's what people do. They don't want to have condoms. China's one child rule is creating. You know, you talk about affecting the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's creating a lot of gay Chinese people that never
sure.
existed before.
Yeah.
There's no one to fuck.
I got to say...
Right. They want one kid. They want the boy. And now they've got like this, you know, 2 billion Vienna boys choir walking around.
I'm not gay, but if I was gay, I think I might go Chinese.
Really?
I feel like that'd be the least impactful sort of, you know, for all the things I don't like about guys.
By the way, let's add that to president's least likely to get the people least likely to get laid. If you were gay, who would you go to list?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be.
I don't think I'd go to China first.
Where would you head?
Greece.
Greece?
Yeah. Sure.
It's just because it's named after a lubricant?
Well, all the statues were from there.
Oh, that's true. So those guys look good there.
Yeah.
Uncut, though.
By the way, it's always been rumored that someone made him shorten the penis on, you know, Michelangelo had to shorten the penis on David.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's a smaller penis, and maybe it's a lie, but I just thought it was a funny idea that, you know, he finished and it was like a 9-inch penis, and the king said, "What the fuck? Get out of there!
Yeah,
take that off."
Yeah.
If my wife sees that.
Yeah. But, sire, where are you going to hang your hat?
Yeah. On the toe.
I didn't know David can't be happy about that. I mean, if David was really packing 9 and then he showed that he went to the art museum and
maybe
he sees a 4,
maybe
he's
it's a lie.
Upset.
I heard it at the Friars. I don't know. Maybe it's a lie.
That was Albert Brooks hanging out with Adam.
Back in 2011, I don't think you're going to be hearing Albert on any more podcasts anytime soon.
Super sharp, incredibly funny, and Adam mentions defending your life about once a week. So
it's a classic, perfect movie. He's got a bunch that people love. They're like Adam loves Defending Your Life. A lot of people agree on that one. There's some earlier stuff people say is even better. And then there's later stuff in the 90s people kind of slag, like Mother, but or Mom, the one where he lives with his mom, moves back with his mom. I love that one. People give it a lot of hard time. It was on HBO all the time, and I ended up watching it probably 5 or 10 different times. And, you know, it has some merit. This is what it would be like if you had a movie with your mom in your middle age.
Yeah. So what a great comedic mind. All right, let's get going with another clip. Now, A few years ago, when Adam released Winning the Racing Life of Paul Newman, he featured a guy named Willie T. Ribbs. And when interviewing Willie and watching his clips and in the movie, we realized Willie is a soundbite machine. And Adam had to dive deep into Willie's story, which is great on its own, and actually made a documentary called Uppity about Willie T. Ribbs, the first African-American who qualified for Indy. Now,
that's half the title Willie wanted.
Yeah, that is half the title, but it's on Netflix now, so make sure to check it out if you haven't already. Willie joined us in London. I remember in 2016, Adam, myself, and August flew out to Europe. We did a few shows in Ireland, Amsterdam, one in London.
Ooh, and Chris is a big shot.
I know. Willie T. Ribbs joined Adam on stage.
Yeah, one of the most unlikely bookings in the most unlikely of places. But, you know, there's tons of racing over there. On live on stage from London in 2016. They taped this in June, aired in early July. Actually, aired on July 5th, 2016. But how bizarre. Adam and Willie T. Ribbs live on stage. Adam Carolla Show, 1850. Check it out.
Ivan, where were we?
Yes, I got in touch with Gary, and Gary kindly suggested that I come down to your studio to say hello. I walked in the door, and you were standing there getting a coffee, and before I knew it, I was sitting in the studio. You'd obviously had no one else more
interesting. No one to speak to. It's much like tonight.
Exactly. You're desperate.
Yeah, I'm desperate. Yeah.
And it was quite an experience, very out-of-body experience.
Okay, and what were you doing in the United States?
I was working with Penn Jillette. Actually, ironically, you had Pete Golden on
yes,
the phone
that's
yesterday.
Penn's manager called me 2 days ago while I was on stage.
He's a friend of mine. I was in touch with him over email this evening. So
yeah,
say hello to Adam.
Yeah, it was funny because I put him on speakerphone and I said, Goldie, what do you want to talk about? And he said, oh, we'll talk about it later. And then I got off stage. Turns out I owe him money. So... I find that people do a lot more calling. Well, Bill Cosby and Paul Newman call you when they want to give you money. I get the calls from people when I owe them money. But all right, so Ivan, you got some news, or we're gonna do sort of the news with you.
Yeah, I'm Gina's proxy here with less décolletage, I'm afraid. I did my best, but I can't compete.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you got?
I don't know if any of you have been paying any attention to the news, but it's been quite traumatic in England. Recently, there was a visit by Donald Trump to Scotland. I don't know if anyone saw that. And the Brits turned out in force.
Oh, they like Trump?
No.
No, they don't like Trump.
There was... Chris, can we have the first photo up? Yeah. Someone stood behind Donald with a balloon and did a bit of physics demonstration. You can see his hair there.
Oh, they pulled his hair up.
It's an absolute classic there.
No, you don't have to worry about that one, Willie.
I have to say, the person who did that should be given an OBE. I honestly think they should.
I've said it more than once, but it bears repeating because I did spend some time with Trump when I did Celebrity Apprentice, and I always have this same line about him, which is when everyone says, "What's he like in real life?" and I always go, just picture Don King, but with crazier hair and a broken moral compass. And Don stomped a man to death. Stomped him to death. Like, literally, take a knee and punch him, would you, Don? No, I'll just kick him. I got a new pinky ring. I don't want to screw it up. Yeah.
So somebody
took a balloon and did that with that thigh rub on it, got the static going, and lifted up Trump's hair. Well, it's all over for politicians, right?
Well, it's certainly. I mean, he just before he arrived in Scotland, he announced just arrived in Scotland. Place is going wild over the vote. They took their country back, just like we will take America back. No games. Mm. To which a local Scot replied, "Scotland voted to stay, you witless fucking cocksplat." There was 62% of Scots rather sensibly voted to remain.
I like cocksplat. And by the way,
could you define that?
Cocksplat?
I believe that's probably some kind of ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
You mean like...
Silence
of the Lamb?
Yeah, Silence of the Lambs. That's right.
We can talk about the birds and the bees backstage later on if you want.
That's their version of Good Day in Scotland. I said good day. Well, it's always weird because coming from the United States, I was like, we're taking this country back. We're taking it back. And it's like, the weird thing is when you take shit back, it usually means it's fucked up and it's a piece of shit and you never get it back. Like, my kid's got a hoverboard and it catches on fire, then I just go fucking take it back and drop it off. I never get another one. So this whole notion of, like, taking it back is a weird and sort of twisted notion to me. But, all right, he went to Scotland. But the good news with Trump is he gets to say whatever he wants.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No filter.
He's like an old black man who works at a barber shop. He can just say whatever the fuck he wants, and no one ever stops him and corrects him, right? Am I right, Will?
Until the police stop him.
Until the police stop him, yeah. Then,
are you at all familiar with a gentleman called Boris Johnson?
Boris Johnson, yeah.
I'll get Chris to pull up a photo. I didn't send Chris a photo, but he can Google it, not just yet. But Boris Johnson is our equivalent of Donald Trump. He has similar hair. He has no filter, and he's an hysterical character. Sadly, it looks as though he may well be the next prime minister, which is rather scary.
Really? Is he gonna run this place?
He's running. It's a good chance. I don't want him to be, and most people don't. But he's a populist. He has a populist vote, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. He's a cunt.
Right, hold on to that epithet. I've got a whole section. There he is.
Oh, that guy.
There he is.
I've seen him. Yeah.
With a slightly posher voice and a better education.
Yes.
We had some other lovely greetings.
He's American? Yeah, you goddamn right he is. You guys with your well-kept hair and your thin physiques, you don't know what crazy is.
When Trump arrived at the airport, there was a mariachi band. Mm-hmm. Awaiting him, which I thought was rather good. A Mexican flag was hosted on the boundary of the golf course. Another comedian called Lee Nelson, who some of you may know, very cleverly wore the same livery as all the other employees in the golf course, started giving out golf balls with swastikas on.
Well, when you need to send a message to your Jewish neighbors and you don't feel like walking around front, I feel like a pitching wedge and a golf ball with a swastika on it is really the most effective way to send the message over to the Goldbergs over there. Maybe playing the stereo a little bit too loud. Can I say this real quick? The mariachi, I've always had this thought about the mariachi band and how horrible it must be to be the guy in the mariachi band who plays the giant guitar. Because somebody did the math on the guitar. I'm convinced this is how the giant guitar was invented, Willie. It was a guy trying to get his dick sucked.
What giant guitar?
Have you never seen a mariachi band where the shortest, squattiest, fattest guy in the band has to play the giant guitar?
That's a bass.
No, it's a giant guitar.
Okay.
It is a giant guitar.
I've seen John Entwistle. I know how the bass is played. No, this is a giant guitar. It's an oversized guitar. It's a casket-sized guitar.
That's one of those things that they beat to get the candy out.
Oh, that's a pinata.
Pinata.
Yeah. That's like Serena's ass. Just keep beating it until that candy comes out. I get a Tootsie Roll sooner or later.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry, Ivan.
That's okay. No problem. Chris, can we have the next slide, which is the other Trump sign, there was a Trump sign, Jane Goodley, she's a well-known comedian. Trump is a C word.
Uh-huh, you can say.
So that was on the golf course.
You can say cute. No, it's kind of, everybody hates Donald Trump, but don't we hate the comedians that are trying to do the bandstanding a little bit more than Donald Trump? Like, I can't stand it when people try to take, like, okay, Trump's a douchebag, that's fine, but you then trying to get notoriety from calling Donald Trump a douchebag, doesn't that make you a slightly greater douchebag? Maybe you're not going to ruin the country, but I don't know who this comedian is, but
she's not that type of person. She was actually making a political statement.
Yeah, well, shut the fuck up. I'm just saying, I know, Look, I sound like a hypocrite because I'm holding a microphone right now and I'm talking my ass off. But I just, I don't know. Why does everyone have to make a political statement? I mean, you're righteous. You're on the side of good. Everyone loves you. Now go the fuck home.
What about Al Sharpton?
I don't like Al Sharpton either.
What about Jesse? You know they're not saying anything?
Yeah, why aren't they saying anything?
Ching, ching.
Oh, really?
Ching, ching. Oh.
They're getting paid?
Oh, Donald paid those guys off years ago, and they're still on the payroll. That's why, you know, you don't see any Jerry curls, you know.
No, I haven't seen.
Dripping on the camera, because those brothers have, you know, gone.
Al silent. Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. And,
oh, they've been paid.
They're in the pocket of Donald Trump.
They're in the back room.
I didn't know that.
Yes,
do you guys?
Balls.
Who do you guys have? Oh, you guys don't have black people. Woo! Bullet dodged. But
we got plenty of them.
You got plenty of them?
Plenty of
them. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, but it's. I didn't know. I'm seeing a lot of white faces. I didn't know the personal. Will. It's different. Sorry, seeing out here. But do you have a black leader? Because we got a whole bunch of them. Like we could lend you one if you need one. I'll send Al Sharpton over tomorrow. we're lousy with black leaders.
Yeah. We've got plenty of black leaders.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
We've just had a Muslim elected as the London mayor, Sadiq Khan.
Okay, good.
So we're a lot more progressive.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Save that story for the next war.
Which I'm sure you'll be late to.
They really have a black elected official?
Wow.
I know my crowd, Adam.
I don't know a ton about history, but you guys are all be speaking Japanese about now. If it weren't for us.
Going on from the previous sign, I actually want to argue something with you for a moment. So, a number of times you've stated that in the UK we use the C word as basically a term of affection, as greeting.
Well, no, you overuse it.
Right.
What I'm saying is we in America realize the power of the cunt. Okay? And so we save it.
Right.
So when we argue with our wives, we don't throw it out. We don't trot it out every Wednesday and be like, hey, cunt, you overcooked the lasagna. Right. Because it loses its power. You know what I mean? Yeah. You guys are calling everyone in the bachelor party a cunt. It's lost its teeth. You know what I mean?
We don't say cunt.
We
say pussy.
Yeah, but when we do trot out the cunt, it is a fucking punch to the cunt. You guys use it so fast and loose with it, it's lost all currency.
Now, Adam, I would severely disagree with you. This the C word is still forbidden on a lot of television channels. It's one of the few words, if you stand in public and shout it, if you don't stop after your request, the police will arrest you straight away. It is still quite a taboo word
I
in the UK.
I get it, but you and your mates hanging around your fucking flats, throw it around like they're dollar poker chips, and you've lost. Hey, look, I'm trying to help. I don't care. You want to lose every argument with your wife? Go ahead. That's fine. I'm keeping my cunt.
Well,
cunt is under a piece of glass that says "break in case of emergency," and I'm keeping it. Because one day when I catch my wife blowing my best friend, boom, I bust out the cunt. Well, I didn't come here to tell you what to do with your cunts.
Well, I would like to say it is a lot more rarely used than you might think. Having said that, and this
you're 6 minutes into the news. I heard it 14 times. What the fuck are you talking about? You trot up here with your cool frames and your skinny jeans and tell me about how many times you use cunt. I saw it 130 times in the last 10 minutes.
Okay, so with that being said, and please excuse the language that's about to follow. This is. Thank you very much. This is actually a true story that came out. This is a new story that came out the other day. This week, the Oxford English Dictionary updated their pages with 900 new entries, most of which were perfectly normal words that were previously overlooked. Of the words they've added, notable words with the swear words cunty, cuntish, cunted, and cunting. According to the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, cunty is a way of describing something that is objectionable or unpleasant, whereas cuntish is for describing a person or behavior that is objectionable and unpleasant.
I got a new word. Hippocunt.
That's a skinny limey who comes on stage, accuses Yanks of not using the word enough, and then proceeds to use it 128 times. Hippocunt. Put that in your Urban Dictionary and smoke it. Thank you. I don't like to call myself hero, but here goes.
I have my last two. Sorry, last two units. Okay,
you're not cunt words.
I'm afraid so. Cunted, on the other hand, is a word for under the influence of drugs and alcohol. And finally, cunting is an intensifier to be used like fucking is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I don't know, Willie. Are you familiar with the Urban Dictionary?
When I first got here, I got called WOG.
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 That's a while back,
I didn't know what the hell that... I mean, I was in a pub.
I don't know what a WOG is.
Yeah, well, it's the equivalent of the N-word, sort of.
It comes from gollywog, which is a black stuffed... Yeah, it's a black stuffed toy.
Yeah.
Which they used on Robinson's Chain.
I got called WOG. And the guy I was standing next to, man, he looked... His face turned red. I said, "Why are you turning red?" He says, "He called you a wog."
Yeah.
I said, "What does that mean?"
Yes,
he
says, "It's no good.
It's your version of the N-word."
Uh-huh.
I looked at him. I said, "It's nigger." Bam! No, that was a true story. Yeah, I did. It was in the pub.
Well. Sorry.
Yeah, it was in the pub.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. My mind was blown because you said when you first got here, I thought you meant 4 days ago.
No.
I was going to say, Jesus Christ, you guys got to get it together over here.
I was 21 years old.
No, you got called a WOG in 1981.
1977.
Yeah. WOG. All right. Woo. Was I the only one in the room that thought this was Wednesday? Okay. All right, so way back when you were called a WOG.
WOG, yeah.
All right.
Anyway, I thought it was pretty tame.
What if we say WAGA? Is that okay?
They haven't. Yeah, that would.
No.
WAGA.
Yeah, we get rid of the ER, we put the A on the end. That's a good one. We can get by with that.
I want to get back to Brixton and introduce that.
All right. So that was way back then.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So I'm sorry. I didn't know what.
Do we?
Chris, you can find how many Urban Dictionary entries do I have? Because I got a lot of those bad boys. Chris will look. I have 9. Oh, yeah. Sorry, they're well one Willie. I don't know if you know this one. I got my own. I invented one called the Behymen. That's something all fellas are born with. Not all of us make it to the grave with it intact.
But you got behind no ass.
Yeah, no, you can easily pop my behind, man. That's why I move fast and my head's on a swivel.
Chris, I'm sure everyone has heard of Chris Rock. Well, he's got a theory. He says the flatter your ass is, the bigger your cock looks.
Mmm. Jesus Christ, would I be in trouble? That's Cedric the Entertainer's ass. I'd be screwed.
Yeah.
Wait, Chris Rock call you at home and tell you that joke? Or did you have to go turn on the TV set?
Yeah, I learned that one from TV.
And that was Adam Carolla and Willie T. Ribbs.
Exactly live. 4 years ago, air date-wise.
That's right. Live from Leicester Square Theater in London. That was a fun one.
I thought you were going to break out the accent because you spent so much time there.
Yeah, I can't do it. I shouldn't do it. All right, let's go with another clip. This one's from 2016.
Oh, yeah. Bret Easton Ellis had a podcast, One Show, for a while. I don't know if he put it behind a paywall. If it's still going, I should probably check that out. It was a really good podcast, and he came on the Adam Carolla Show along with Gina Grant and Brian Bishop in September of 2016. Really interesting interview. Really kind of interesting chemistry with Adam, something I was never expecting to hear, and I really enjoyed it.
I was just thinking to myself, like, there are eventually going to be more people on camera than off camera. Mm-hmm. And there'll be, my kids probably look forward to an app one day where it's an app of the back of their head staring at the phone. Because it's all just going to be one on one. It always blows my mind because when I was in junior high if you were on TV, I knew who you were. You were you're like Gopher from The Love Boat, or you're a Cooter from Dukes of Hazzard, or you're the local news guy. But I knew, everyone was accounted for. I don't think when I was 13, you couldn't have introduced me to someone and went, "This guy's on TV," and me go, "Never seen you before." I'd always been, "Of course, you're the dad from
Roscoe P. Coltrane."
Right, right. I would know your character name. Now there's just whole gaggles of people that are on wildly successful shows are like, "This guy's he's a bartender from Sons of Anarchy." It's like, I don't know. I've never seen him before.
Well,
like,
it isn't just
he's a star.
It isn't just shows. I mean, there's three main members of the cast of the show, The Deleted. It's an ensemble show, about eight major parts. But part of the deal we made was three of them had to be influencers. Mm-hmm. They had to be YouTube stars, Vine stars, Instagram stars. And I knew very little about this world. But they really are the movie stars for that generation. I mean, movie stars really don't matter anymore for millennials and kids younger than millennials. It's Nash Greer who has, you know, became an Instagram star. And he has, you know, if he puts any kind of content out, a tweet, a photo, it's like he has 25 million eyes watching it. So he's very, you know, advertisers are very susceptible to people like Nash Graham, Cam Dallas. We have a girl named Amanda Cerny who has a massive following. And it was just a very interesting world of fame that we don't really know about.
No, but I know we jumped the fame shark. I've said it many times, but I've never really thought about what it meant. But when the Harrison Fords of the world had to start going to Comic-Con, that's when they stopped being celebrities and all the kids with the smartphones became the celebrities. Like, in days of yore, celebrities would not go to a place called Comic-Con. There's just no way they would have danced that way.
Well, the whole notion of celebrity now is completely degraded. Yeah. I mean, and is that good or bad? I don't know. And I mean, do we miss the old, you know, kind of empire, super famous movie star who was mysterious, enigmatic, and we knew, you know, I don't know if that's, I miss it because I'm a man of a certain demo and of a certain era, and I grew up with that, but I don't know.
I sort of miss it, but again, I don't know if it's good or bad. I just like the idea. I mean, I used to watch Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and, you know, he'd be talking about Morgan Freeman. I mean, Morgan Fairchild. Like, she owns a beach, and then you'd just be sitting around, and it was kind of fun. Yeah. You know, like, I didn't want to go to the internet and read she's a whore, she can blow me, or something like that. You know, I liked the idea that she was just this.
Yeah.
Just this. Like, the entire cast of Falcon Crest was just them, these imaginary people.
On a pedestal.
Everyone's hair was always perfect. Yeah. The makeup was always perfect. They were always wearing something. They were always driving something that was right. Yep. And that's just who they were. Yep. Didn't know anything else about them.
Democratization of the culture. You know, it really has stripped the mystery from everything. It really has ruined so much. This overwhelming need for content, too many movies, too many TV shows, knowing everything about your favorite actors. It really is like, you know, it does make everything seem less special. Put it that
well, way. And also, if you kind of look at it as, you know, I don't know, whatever relationship you used to have with Santa Claus. I mean, my son, unfortunately, has to know everything about every athlete now. It's not enough that this guy was just a great quarterback or a great basketball player. Has to know that he's getting sued by his ex-lover or whatever it is, a paternity suit or picture of him. Yeah, something his dork is out there on the internet. Like, it does kind of make him grow up a little bit quicker. We used to just have whoever it was, Joe Namath or Drysdale, or the pitcher was. Ironically, Joe Namath. Yeah, this guy's he's man about town. Yeah. You know, look at
ladies
him.
Ladies man.
Yeah, and a Broadway Joe, and it was
never
great.
Never the same
and,
girl twice.
And that was, it was just kind of fun. And yeah.
Now he would probably be convicted of misogyny and rape in our culture right now. God, you know, this idea that we have to know everything about a person's past really has transformed everyone into some kind of ideological, you know, thing rather than just an actor, a director, a singer. I mean, I think the Nate Parker thing is very indicative of what is going on in the culture right now.
Wait, what's the Nate Parker thing?
Nate Parker's a young black actor who wrote and directed The Birth of a Nation, this slave epic that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been known that since 1999, he was accused of rape at his college, along with his friend. Supposedly the girl was unconscious, but he had had a relationship with her previously. He was acquitted. And the thing was put to rest, but it has come out again now. And, you know, Oprah's ignoring him. The AFI canceled the screening of the movie. It's just, and it really even reminds me of my friend James Dean, who was accused by an ex-girlfriend of one afternoon, you know, raping her. And I know James. Porn actor James Dean.
Right.
And it just is this kind of the, what was so shocking about seeing James Dean lose all of his, you know, some of his sponsors and the production companies, was that he had only been accused. There had been nothing had been proved. And it really is a scary moment in this culture where anything from your past, any kind of flaw, any kind of mistake you've made, you are automatically punished because people want to punish people. That really is what it's, you know, the audience, the mass social media audience, that's the narrative they want so much.
Well, and that's so interesting. Between what you just said and, Adam, what you were saying before, has there ever been another time in history where we've been so desensitized and so outraged at the same time?
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's crazy.
It's bizarre to have that duality. And then also the poor problem with these people, whether it's I don't know if you're the guys from Duke Lacrosse or whatever,
right,
it is.
Right, yeah.
First things first, we just snap into action before we get any answers. Like, coach fired, dean of students,
right, fired.
You're gone. Yeah. You guys suspended. Team disbanded. Yeah. Like,
leave.
Shouldn't we go ahead and get some answers first before everyone starts getting fired and it turns into pariahs and reputation destroyed and all? Can't we? Should we at least dig around a little bit before we get? Before we start swinging into justice or exacting revenge mode, shouldn't we at least let the dust settle or the smoke clear on wherever the accident zone is and see if we can?
It's too long. It takes too long.
It drives me insane. And then the part that's really bad about it is it's so hard to climb into the psyche of America and unring some bell because we're so distracted. We don't really have time. You're just, if you brought up Duke Lacrosse to somebody 5 years from or now or even 10 years from now, I'd be like, oh, yeah, those white guys who raped that, they raped that girl. They raped that girl. Yeah, or something. Or then, I don't know, they got a good lawyer or something. I don't remember after that. And it's like, now moving on. It's like, if you're those guys and this happens, whatever color you are, and it's happened a million different times, and it's happened on the victim side and on the perp side, but either way, that just gets carved into people's psyche, and then they move on with raising their kids and watching their movies and whatever it is they do on a day-to-day basis. And then for the poor people, that's just in everyone's bone marrow for the rest of their lives. That's the real danger of it, is that it never really goes away.
But it really is, what are the offenses? The offenses seem to be getting more and more mundane in a way. I mean, Ryan Lochte making some jokes in Rio about maybe the cop pulling a gun or whatever, you know, within 24 hours, losing all the sponsors. I mean, that kind of punishment for that kind of a bunch of young guys drunk out in Rio, it just seems the punishment just doesn't seem to fit the crime. It seems to be a kind of over-punishment that for some reason gratifies the culture in a way. It just seems basically unfair. And I think the same thing that's happening to Nate Parker right now is kind of crazy.
So his story was in 99, there was a sort of date rape allegation.
Well, the girl said actual rape. She was unconscious. They had been together before, and they had all been at a party. They'd been heavily drinking, and it ended up in a sexual situation with him and his friend, who's also the co-writer of Birth of a Nation.
But is the first thing we do is put a target on the back of the guy who's reviving this franchise that we don't want to think about? Or where's it politically coming from? Because a lot of the time we have to disagree with what he's doing in the present time in order to dig up the past.
Well, it's coming from a news media that is hungry for every single story that they can turn into an intense, dramatic narrative. And it's kind of a overcalculation of things. It's not as if this is was not kind of not known. I think it's actually been on Nate Parker's Wikipedia page that he was acquitted of a rape that he was accused of in 1999. It's, that was out there. But bringing it up in terms of the narrative of The Birth of a Nation, which was widely believed to be going to win the Oscar for Best Picture in February, and was paid, you know, Fox Searchlight paid, I think, $18 million for it when they saw it at Sundance. It was being prepped to be this giant thing that was happening, a big prestige movie. And so I think the narrative was inevitable to make this narrative even more interesting was to drag that out back into public life and see how it works, especially in this super sensitive moment in the culture about rape culture, about black men, about it had all of the, you know, ingredients for a story that could get a lot of play. And I just think what happened, as it does in a lot of these cases, it just gets blown up into a kind of catastrophe that we all have to weigh in on. We all have to have an opinion, and it just feeds the story. It keeps it going. It makes it bigger. It makes it more dramatic. It makes it more violent, more crazier. And then you're right. The person who's at the center of it really gets, I think, unfairly punished.
Well, to me, the biggest problem in these kinds of stories is you have to. So what happens in life is decisions or information gets out there. Like every once in a while, there'll be some, let's just say the age of consent was 20. And some politician said, I believe we should lower the age of consent to 18 because it's causing a lot of undue crime when there really isn't any crime being had here, whatever. And then everyone just knee-jerkingly says, this guy wants to lower the age of consent.
Pervert.
And then everyone, so what? You're going to have sex with what? Your niece? Or the unborn? Or a cassava melon that you put in the microwave for just the right amount of time? Is that what you want to do, Senator Perv? And then everyone else goes, well, what side of this do I want to get on?
We should raise it.
And then I'm going to come out with articles and op-ed pieces, and I'm going to make sure I'm on this because I don't want anyone. It's this weird thing where we've all kind of been in this situation, and it's almost like a it's sort of primal in that I'll try to articulate it correctly here, but you get in that group and some big guy's in the middle of the group and he's talking about something that you don't really agree with, but if you raise your hand and go, I disagree, he's going to turn and look at you. And then there's a chance that he might go, let's get him, boys. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, everyone's going to be on top of you. So what you do is you put your head down and you just sort of sit there. And every once in a while he goes, does everyone agree? And you go, I do. Huzzah. Huzzah. And then you put your head back down again. And so are you saying you're pro rape?
Well, I'm not saying.
All right. Well, then we should take this guy and boycott his next 100 movies. Right. And so the bigger problem is not that this act occurred or that this guy wasn't found guilty or found guilty or that he has a lawyer or a dad or a mom or a new wife and kids that he has to deal with. It's just this court of public opinion that doesn't have all the facts, but do know that they want to be counted in the group that is against rape and not for lowering the age of consent and against shooting Cecil the Lion. And we're all going to come out on the happy side of everything. And the way we can get more merit badges is to come out stronger against this person. And that way I'll be put in a somehow better position as far as society goes. That's the part. Everyone weighing in that has no business. Your answer is, I wasn't there. I don't know what happened.
Well, feelings are not facts. And that's a big thing that's going on in the culture. Emotion overrides logic. Emotion overrides context. Emotion changes the narrative of the situation. And I think we're also in a culture of self-victimization. And everyone loves to victimize themselves. And it is a huge part of the problem with what's going on college campuses. And I'm so glad University of Chicago finally came to their senses, told students, you can't be triggered. There are no safe spaces. We're having controversial speakers. And I think part of the reason they're doing that, and a lot of colleges are going to follow suit. You're going to watch this. They're going to follow suit because alumni isn't giving any money. They're just not giving any money to coddling people and living in a $40,000 a year safe space.
I'm with you. I've said it on this program. And also, I've said this, and I really do mean it for all the people who always think I'm a hard ass. I don't know any successful victims. I know people that have been victimized who don't look at themselves as victims,
correct,
have moved on and become successful. But people who look at themselves currently as a victim because of something that may have happened 20 years ago, or the color of their skin or ethnicity or whatever it is, I don't know any successful versions of that.
Because that's an illness.
It is.
It is an illness to do that to yourself. It is a psychological illness to let some trauma define you for the rest of your life, and therefore you can't read Shakespeare, you can't read Moby Dick, because something in you is going to be triggered by it.
Or how about
get help.
Just being born poor or Hispanic or black or whatever the illness or whatever the problem is, at least illness, as spoken by politicians. No, what I'm saying is, well, there's sickle cell. Yeah. The point is this. How about just being born into stuff and deciding and having people tell you you'll never get anywhere because you're born on the wrong side of the tracks, mm-hmm, or poor, to a single mom, mm-hmm, or whatever your ethnicity or religion or whatever that is. That is a real illness. And that drives me insane. And I know what the politicians are doing, but I'm always like, why are you poisoning these people? It's already hard enough what they're doing. What they need is the opposite of what you're doing, which is, look, everyone came to this country with nothing, and mm-hmm, now you got nothing.
Right.
And there's a lot of people around you that got more. So let's join their ranks and let's get to work.
Yeah, but we really can't talk about it because we're white, privileged, cisgenders. And we really don't have a voice anymore. We have to shut up and let other people talk because we don't know anything, Adam.
I know.
We don't know anything.
You guys really should go for coffee. We need more time.
Well, I want to know about Brett. I want to know. I'll tease it out there. But you're gay or bisexual or
I'm gay. I'm gay.
We're going with gay.
Yeah.
All right. So you could easily be in a class of victims that you obviously don't choose to see yourself in or as. But I'd like to know just. It's true. We're both just white dudes, but I'm a white heterosexual dude, so I really got no cards to play.
That's true.
You're gay, so you can be a victim if you'd like. I got to do a spot here, but I'd like to know kind of how you approach that. I'm going to editorialize. I don't like the idea of gay people. I don't like their
don't
first
stop
thought.
There. Yeah. Don't
no,
stop there.
I'm done. No, I don't want everyone's first thought to be, I'm black, I'm gay, I'm Hispanic, I'm a woman. I just want you to be, I'm a person, I'm American, I'm a human being, I'm a father, I'm a son, I'm a worker. And then when you get down the list a little bit, you can
pair it after that.
Yeah, you can be gay tomorrow.
And that was Brett Easton Ellis. Really great conversationalist, I think. Him and Adam always have something to talk about, and love whenever he comes on. Big fan of his work, too. All right, let's go with another clip. This one features Glenn Phillips. We've played some Glenn Phillips in the past, but this one is from 2016, so it might be his most recent appearance yet.
I believe it is. Adam Carolla Show, 1898, Glenn Phillips, Gina Grand, Brian Bishop. Also September 2016. Check it out.
Been dreaming of the day of judgment and wondering what I'll say. For the seasons I lost to sorrow, the sin of my wasted days. For the beauty I should have noticed, the kindness I did not give. For the bounty I took for granted, the life that I could have lived. Hell up at the gates of heaven.
Glenn Phillips, Toad the Wet Sprocket, one of our favorites, is back. Good to see you, Glenn.
Nice to be back.
I think that's my new stripper song.
Okay.
That was pretty hot.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you have a stripper name?
Midnight.
Don't we have to do some sort of algorithm that involves a street you grew up on and your first cat or something?
Pretty Kitty Bond, yeah.
Mm. That's good.
That's good.
Either a cat or a flower.
So... Hey, buddy! Pretty Kitty Bonds coming up on stage 5.
That's awesome.
By the way, I'm going to replace Kitty with Titty. You'll know what I mean, gentlemen. Yeah, she's going to make it rain. Her own self. Glenn, hold on. Jade, stage 4. All right. Glenn, so we were just listening to you last night at the JFK It's got to be nice, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure you don't stay up thinking about it, but isn't it nice to know that at about 7:10 your time yesterday evening, there was a whole bunch of people standing in New York in an airport, and your voice was being piped in through every speaker. I went to the bathroom before I got on the plane. It was pumping in the bathroom.
Everybody's going,
yeah, right.
Yeah, it's good. I get a little tingle in various parts of my, like when it's New Jersey, it's like it's my left ankle around the Achilles tendon. Just like pings, and it's nice to know.
Is there an ASCAP-y thing? Like, do you get 15 cents for that? Should I be
ASCAP-y
reporting
thing.
It?
It's like, I think it's 9.5 cents now. So split. I guess five ways. So, yeah, I get a couple of shekels.
I have no idea how they keep track of that, but it's kind of nice when you go through the Burbank airport, it's all 80s music. Mm-hmm. They've decided that somehow you want to hear Flock of Seagulls before you get in a Southwest flight, which I'm always usually annoyed because I don't like the human league. Like when I'm traveling, my whole deal is just play classical or jazz. Would you? I'm traveling. I don't need to be thinking about this crap. But as time wears on, the 90s stuff is going to start. We'll go. And evidently JFK is already hip to the 90s stuff. And, Toad the Wet Sprocket, such a huge part of that decade. And then I thought, God, you were so young. That album came out in 91.
Yeah, it's weird to be. I'm 45 and I'm already part of a nostalgia movement.
It's insane. And you were like 19 or 20 when you recorded that?
Yeah, 19 and 20 for the Fear album.
So did...
My kids are older. Like two of my kids are older than I was when I started working on that record.
And we were sort of alluding to all that stuff where it's like... like, you know, the cops being so much younger than you, or like if you watch football and you realize you're the average age of the NFL coach yeah. or something. Now it's like weird, like old guy math that
he's
I like
the youngest coach in the league at 36.
Torture myself yeah. with. But so for you, this is all you've ever done, right?
Pretty much.
I mean, you've never had to seriously take a crack at another career. This is.
No, I mean, I dabbled in like in clinical depression for about a decade, I would say. But it wasn't, you can't really make any money doing that.
Is that because of the amazing success of the first album? Or
I just think I'm wired that way.
You just wired?
Ashkenazi thing, you know?
I feel you.
Are you Ashkenazi as well?
Yeah, European Jews.
Yeah.
The shtetl people.
We're developed. I mean, you even look at the shtetl, like the culture, it basically it rewards OCD and anxiety.
It's like, it's right. Such a weird, it's so, because I just had good old white trash depression. I grew up just sort of downtrodden, nothing. You know, so my family was like, the way my family would be like, is I'd go, well, I'm moving out of the one house up under the Hollywood sign, and I'm moving to the other house at Lake Hollywood, but I'm thinking about keeping the house and renting it out. And they go, yeah, but what if a band of gypsy bikers move in and start selling meth and tear the place apart? I'm like, all right, but how about a nice gay couple comes in and pays me $4,000 a month for the rest of my life?
Leaves the place better than they found it.
Yeah, how about that? And but they're just always – my grandfather was a Jew from Hungary. His greatest he's a Hungarian Jew, and it's so funny because like the nicest people on one hand are the biggest bummers on the other. And he said he was getting old. He had no idea what I was doing. I was doing K-Rock radio, you know, Loveline. I was doing MTV. No one in my family had cable, so they didn't know what MTV was. And my grandmother would say, like, if I was doing The Tonight Show, she'd be like, oh, a real channel. We can watch.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, thank you. Thank you. So he said to me once, I said to him, I'm making a lot of money. You don't get it. I said, I'm working. I'm a Hollywood guy. And I made like $500,000-$600,000 or something that year. But, you know, for my family, that's a – And he said, you really? You're making a lot of money. I said, yeah, I'm making a lot of money. He said, really? I said, yeah. He said, are you making $1 million a year? And I said, no. No, I'm not. And he was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not making $1 million a year. And the next year, I made $1 million. I made like $1,030,000 or something. And I went right back to him. And I said, hey, Grandpa, remember? Remember you're telling me about this? And I said, this year, I made over $1 million. And he went, well, money doesn't buy happiness. Oh. You old Jew!
You swept the leg.
He used the jujitsu. Took me because of what it is they. What is jujitsu? It's not boxing. We use your momentum against you. You yes. Come at me. We grab you by the gi and we throw you on the ground and we choke you out with your own gi.
Oh, I remember coming back home. It's like, Mom, I got a 4.2 GPA. It's like, huh? I don't see you studying. You should take harder classes.
Thankfully, Grandpa dodged that bullet. My favorite, I had to deal with that.
My favorite jujitsu was calling my mother once on Mother's Day. I called her the day before just to say, hello, I love you, how you doing? I called her on Mother's Day, and the very first words out of her mouth were, what a surprise, I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah.
Wow. 24 on Mother's hours.
Day, having called 24 hours before, it's just she can't help it. It's her way of saying she cares.
Yeah, it's funny because I never, when I was a kid or when I was younger, I'm from North Hollywood. Like, I didn't really know what Jews were, you know. It's just everyone was just sort of poor and stupid or whatever. But my grandfather, a little later on, like when I'd go visit, you know, I'd go visit and sit there and, you know, eat soup, watch The Price is Right, you know. And then I'd go, at a certain point, I'd go, all right, Grandpa, I'm going to head off now. And he'd go, you're leaving? And I go, yeah, I got to go. So you're going to go? And I'm like, how painful does it have to be, old man? And by the way, the concept of guy standing up and walking toward the door who drove there.
So soon?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like this weird thing. It's like you've not wrapped your head around this concept that I'm not moving in. I got to go home or I got to go to work. But why does it have to be so brutal? Why does it have to be so painful?
I'm already sitting here thinking, oh, God, Mom's going to listen to this because she actually really loves me. And she looks up everything I'm in. And I love you, Mom. You did a great job.
Gary, you got to write down, you know, J-E-W. I'm not for today, but I'm going to open up the phone lines and we're going to give the greatest examples of the jujitsu. I mean, the $1 million and the money doesn't buy happiness. There could be nothing less satisfying to me in that moment than bragging to my grandfather I made $1 million and explaining I'm still going to be miserable.
It's so good.
It's so good. Oh, it's so good, but there's so many great.
Glenn's phone answering is pretty good. Oh, I haven't heard from him in quite some time.
That's
good.
It's
subtler though. $1 million. Yeah, I've never been able to do that particular one.
Well, if you sell enough copies of Swallowed by the New, which is out and available October 7th, you get it on Amazon if you like. And by the way, bookmark us, click through our banner, and show a little love, and get Glenn's and Toad the Wet Sprocket's new album. And then, God willing, you'll be able to go to your mom with $1 million.
Yes. So she can be disappointed.
Now here's the scary. Here's the sad part. And I'll do this on behalf of Glenn's living mother and my dead grandfather. Here is the irony. He loved me. That man loved me.
So when they stop performing jujitsu on you, is when you have sort of written out.
You've been written out. Yeah.
Glenn's mom loves me. He thought I was going a different direction.
You got it.
She loves me. She loves Glenn. He loves
you. You never write her back.
Though. Yeah. So it's like, why the people you love so much? Why this for them?
Yep. They're always the recipient.
It's such a weird wiring, and they would heap praise and brag about, like, Jules Mandel got himself a part in Man of La Mancha. Now, it's going to be at the Conejo Valley Junior College Theater, and they're only doing it on two Thursdays, but we're over the moon for Jules and his non-pants. Like, I'm hosting a TV show. How about we talk about that for a second?
I'm sure, though, your grandfather, the day after he told you the money doesn't buy you happiness, like, went to his canasta club or whatever it is he does and told everybody, it managed to work into some hand that, yeah, well, you know, my grandson just made $1 million. Like, I'm sure he managed to tell the guy at the butcher shop and everybody else.
He may have even bragged about it or had a glowing discussion with my grandmother, but it went like this. Like, hey, did you hear Adam? Shh. He may hear us. Yeah. He may not. Wait till his car starts. Yeah. You got to hear the door close, but wait for the car starts because you got to have the window down. He could hear us saying kind things about him.
He might be stricken with self-esteem.
Right, look out the window, but don't let him see you. Okay, is he down the street? Good. Now, make sure, do a hard target search for his wallet and cell phone because we don't want him to double back and walk in and we're in the middle of a conversation that's complimentary about our grandson.
Well, so, but if you think you're gone, then you won't work so hard and then you won't do so well. So they want to make sure you keep working hard by being insecure.
Like a coach. We did it because we cared.
My grandmother would tell me on occasion, because my grandmother was brutal. And she's not even a Jew. I think she just bunked up with a Jew long enough. She had
Catholic?
All the makings of a great bummer Jew. She just, it never been weaponized. Sleeping with a Jew weaponized her. She had all this great, all the makings of a goyim bummer Jew, but she could never really get it all together until Laszlo Gorog came into her life, and then she was able to do it.
It's like the 5'10" white wide receiver who runs great routes, crisp and perfect, but he's not blessed with the physical skills.
Well, no, she had all. She was like, I'll go back to football. She was like Christian Okoye. Huge, Olympic speed, everything else. Never seen a football. Mm. All she needed was a guy to hand her football and go run that way. Next thing you know, running through the league.
Bippity,
you know
what I mean?
She had all the physical skills to be a great bummer. Yeah. Mm. And never really learned how to apply it. And then once Grandpa moved in, I mean, she was the worst. She was awesome. There's all right, I'll give you one good grandma bummer story. We were sitting at my mom's house. Oh, there's a million. I had two shows on cable once, and her and my mom announced to the world that they needed one good reason why they should get cable.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, which is funny because I had two shows on cable. They're like, they want me to sign up for this cable. I keep getting these flyers. Can anyone give me one good reason why I should get cable? Like,
I give a couple.
She did this great one where I actually had to stop the conversation in a very uncomfortable way and yell at her and my mom and then the poor couple that was being traumatized from out of town that was made the mistake of having dinner with us. She said something. I don't know what she said. You lost some weight. You look good. I like this look much better than the old look. You were, you know, when you were in high school, so you were so big and bursting out of your clothes. It just didn't look good. And I was like, well, I was playing football, you know. Yeah, but just the way you were bursting out of your clothes, and it just wasn't attractive. And I said, and everyone just sat there and was sort of drinking it in. God forbid mom ever pipe up. And then at a certain point, I stopped and I said to the couple, I said, I know you're picturing a kid with a thyroid condition because his own grandmother is saying you're unattractive and bursting out of your clothes and you're picturing Gilbert Grape. What you're probably not picturing is an All-Valley football player who's first team All-Valley. Are you picturing that?
Trying to show off the guns.
Who lived in the weight room.
At linebacker, not at defensive tackle.
Yeah, so that's who they're talking about, but I feel like I need to straighten that out right now because you probably think they're glossing over the fact that I was morbidly obese and that somehow I've got through the lap band surgery. I'm sure you're not picturing a first team All-Valley football player right now, are you? And they're like, no. Well, that's what I was doing in high school, thus the bursting out of my clothes because I lived in the weight room. So Mom, thank you for not chiming in. Grandma, thanks for painting this horrible picture.
Right.
But I just want to tell the couple from Texas, this is what was going on when I was in high school.
And you know what a lot of moms do when the kid's bursting out of their clothes? They go take them, buy them a new set of clothes.
I was going to say, that may have been more reflection on the clothes buying habits of the girls.
I'm thinking of it as Maria Bamford has a bit that's talking about, you know, in her family, the family sport was joy whack-a-mole.
What?
Anytime joy pops up, you just bam!
It's so, now, for me, I just every 3 times a week, because it's free, that's the problem. That's the thing that drives me nuts. Like, you can say, hey, how come we never got to Europe more often? It's like, well, we didn't have any money. Mm. Okay, but I just drive with my kids, and they'll be in the car, and I'll go, isn't this awesome? And they'll go, what? I'll go, this. Look at you guys. You guys got the best mom. You got a fair to middling dad with a pretty good bank account. We're going to the shop. We got Philly cheesesteak, the dog lapping up the side of your face.
Sweet car.
We're going to look at a Paul Newman race car. Like, this is not too shabby, right? This is, anyone have it better than us? And it's like they go, yeah, and it makes them feel good. It's free. Yeah. I don't get why that's not. Why not do the free part? Do you do that, or are you falling? Are you falling into this with your? Have you been guilty of doing the same thing?
Oh,
jujitsu.
Oh, you know, I probably do. I think I give a good little guilty deal. But my kids seem generally happy and intact. I mean, they're two of them are away, moved out of the house now, and they're like ridiculously happy people.
So you did something.
I mean,
right?
Minus the divorce 2 years ago, but
but they're out of the house.
Aside from that,
right?
Two of them are out of the house. 15-year-olds at home. They're the most amazingly like well adjusted. I have no idea where they came from. They are shockingly, intact and happy and satisfied human beings.
Do you have? You guys can think. I'll tell you what. Gina and Glenn and Brian, although. I think Brian experienced much jiu-jitsu growing
no,
up.
No, my parents were supportive. Sorry, guys.
And I was a happy kid. My mom's a happy person.
A dusting of it is a good
okay,
thing.
Okay, we get
a dusting,
it.
Just a dusting is a good
on.
Thing. But Glenn and Gina, come up with one good jiu-jitsu.
I already used my good one.
All right, well, give us your B-.
I'll do my best. I got a decent, not for me, an okay example.
I'll tell you guys about BetDSI. NFL season starting. You ready? Check out BetDSI.com. They've been around for over 20 years, top-rated business, safe. I play there. Gary plays there. We play there. You play there. That's right. BetDSI. And they have a special. You can start off with $50 free. That's right. That's right. Plus 100% bonus on your first deposit. Use the promo code Corolla50. That's Corolla50. So great customer service. Fast, easy. They pay the winnings out. Gary?
Yeah, I've been killing it on the MMA, but I also threw in some money on the election just because the odds were so crazy that I figured why not. But that $50, most of the other podcasts I listen to aren't giving that good a promo. So this is a pretty solid way to do it.
Yep, you can get started out and whatever sport, like I said, NFL, NASCAR, F1, man. If you got European flair.
They got esports. You can bet on people playing video games.
What a world.
What a world.
Trump versus Clinton. Go to betdsi.com right now. Let's go there. Promo code Corolla50. Get $50 to start playing with. All right. What do we got? Got one, Gina? Got one, Glenn? And Brian as well.
Well, my mom's, hers is more like delusional jujitsu, so it's not just straight out guilt because she does love me aggressively and is so proud of me. But I took dance when I was a kid. I wasn't very good at it. I didn't really like it. Never been very coordinated. But in her mind, that's the career that got away. She loves the Rockettes. She loves all the professional dance stuff. And so every time that comes on, she just looks at the screen and looks at me all sad and goes, if you would have stuck with dance, that could have been you. I'm not a good dancer. What are you talking about?
And you could have ended up wasting a nice portion of your life pursuing something that you probably wouldn't get paid to do.
Exactly. Oh, that could have been you. Just a couple more tap classes.
Yeah. But at least that shows. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Delusional jujitsu. Mm-hmm. The woman loves me aggressively.
I remember my grandmother, I'd say to her, once I was being flown out, I got flown out privately to WHFS in part of my family's problem is they're so downtrodden that they can't picture any kind of success or any accolades or anything. But we're on our affiliate with WHFS in Washington, D.C. They would do the WHF Festival. Maybe Toad the Wet Sprocket played there back in the day. It would be at RFK Stadium, a huge football stadium.
Yeah, I remember the first three rows were Henry Rollins fans waiting for Henry Rollins. They all turned their backs to us, stuck their middle fingers in the air for our entire
set.
Hey, at least I didn't touch you.
I thought you drowned in that ocean, you homos.
Keep walking.
Acoustic guitars.
All I want is you off the stage.
So they were flying me out because I was one of the biggest names on their station, because Loveline was huge on their station. They'd fly me out in a private jet just to walk out on stage and bring out Henry Rollins or whoever, mm-hmm. and then fly me, serve me dinner that night, and then fly me home the next day. And like my I was saying to my grandma, I got to go to D.C. I'm going to fly out. And she's like, yeah, well, you got to keep the boss happy. And I said, no, it's not that. Well, you know, these fillets, they can come and they can drop you. And I was like, no, we're doing it as a favor to them because we're so big on their station. And they're like, well, you got to do what you got to do. And I'm like, let's not turn this into me going out there to suck up to the guys. I'm going Fat there cats. To return like MacArthur to the Philippines or to go out in front of 65,000 people and go nuts, not trying to save my job. That was like, she was spinning it. I was trying to save my job on an affiliate, you know, and it was like, oh,
good luck.
Goddamn. All right, Glenn, what do you got? You got a B minus?
Almost. Yeah, my B minus is probably, and it's something that I'm told that I do on occasion too, and I try not to, which is, showing you're listening by disagreeing with somebody while actually saying what they're saying. Meaning, if I say it's a beautiful day outside, returning that with, no, it's really sunny and warm.
Right.
And like,
pleasant.
Yeah, you just told me what I told you, but you told me I was wrong at the same time.
Yes.
It's a lot of that. Active listening.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a weird part where people say, you know, you say, here's what we're going to do. And they go, no. And then they repeat exactly what you just said. And I always stop and go, that's exactly what I just said. They go, oh, yeah. And I go, well, why did you say no?
Because to argue is to love. Mm. To disagree is to means you're engaged. But yeah, it means you're listening.
Your default setting is to say, start every response with no.
No.
It's a weird setting.
No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
No.
I think I do it too, which is really,
Brian, do you have a...
The only example that comes to mind, and maybe it's a decent one you guys have to tell me, is I remember it was my junior year in high school, because I was going to about to apply to colleges. I'm in the back seat of the car as my parents are driving. We're going somewhere. I don't know where we're going. But in the back seat, and they're like, so you know, what schools are you filling applications for? What are you thinking? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, this is right when I started to consider USC. I'm like, I think I'm thinking about, you know, USC. It's in state. It's got a good journalism program. You know, it's a private school. Probably get some financial aid. And my mom said, I don't know, Brian. That's a good school. Thank you.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I don't
know. That's a hard school to get into. That's what she said.
That's great.
That's a hard school to get into.
My grandmother never stopped with that. I can read. I just don't. I don't read very well, but I can read. And she'd always be like, "I know you can't read, but you should really look at this article in the New Yorker." And I'd be like, "I can read. It's not something like I build houses and do things like that, but I can read." She's like, oh, "Okay, I understand. You can't read." Weird. That's also weird. Like, why are you rounding everyone around you down? Like, these are your
old people.
Lady. You're looking worse because you got an illiterate, poor. Why are you making me into less of what I could be? Because it doesn't reflect on you very well. But she was a woman whose brother killed himself with a hunting rifle in a small house in the valley.
Whenever you hear that, I want to know how. Like, the killing yourself with a rifle, like, does it always involve a vice and string?
It involves
a police system?
I think it involves a toe in your mouth.
Oh, you can do it.
Yeah.
That's smart.
I'm assuming. And I said,
that's smart.
And I always think of it. No, I always think if I wanted to kill myself, I would stand.
Yeah.
I never thought of. Anyway.
No.
Yoga.
That you'd rather, like.
Glenn has a Rube Goldberg-esque device that triggers the gun. I guess
that's the marble into Plinko, yeah.
Thank God I never tried.
Yeah. 7.5 minutes will work.
Toes.
Brilliant.
Sorry. That was not so fair.
I'm sure my I think my grandmother probably gave it a happy spin, which is Robert was trying to blow himself and the gun went off.
Glass half full.
But it's a 900 square foot house in the valley, and I was like, "Oh yeah." Then we moved in. She said, "I said, oh, got to be weird, right? What weird? You know where he killed himself in the What do you mean?" I said, well, your brother, he killed himself in this small house. Was it on the porch or something? No, it was in your grandfather's his office.
Oh, God.
I mean, later became his office. Well, we moved in, you know. All right, that's weird, right? What do you mean? I said, it's kind of weird. It got the little house. How so, though? I don't know what you're talking about. It's for most people, I stifled myself for saying for human beings. I just go for some people. For some people, it's considered an uncomfortable thing. And she's like, why? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, because it has a meaning to the people. And I'm like, and by the way, in terms of realtors, you have to disclose this stuff. And she's like, get the hell out of here now. Now I know you're lying. I'm like, I'm not lying. If you kill yourself, like within 6 years, someone in the house, that's part of the disclosure. She's like, oh, please.
Wasn't buying your
that's
line.
Our baseline. That's our jumping off point for human beings.
Where's her family from? I'm assuming you're going to say Armenian or something. It's a question of how much genocide your family has faced. Where it's
we tried not to talk about it as best we could. She is like a third or fourth. I'm laughing because she's like a fourth, fifth generation American, like Californian. Like her dad ran a contracting business that like paved half of Hollywood, like the 20s or something. I'm laughing is that she would claim back in the day that she was part of the Daughters of the Revolution or whatever, that if you're here long enough and can go back, trace the lineage back long enough, you can find somebody who signed the Declaration of Independence. Daughters of the American Revolution. But the thing that always cracked me up when I was like 11, once in a while my grandma would have a couple glasses of wine, she'd go, you know, you can trace me straight back to the Daughters of the American Revolution. And my mom would like lean over and go, no, there's no way. It can't be done. No, she's just saying that. Don't believe. And I'm like, who's ever going to check this out?
I'm not going to get
a DNA swatch. It's 1977.
You know, 23andMe.
Like, we can't just let the old lady think she's part of one of the founders of it. Like, how's this going to hurt? This is really going to damage. By the way, how much lower can we get? This is all we have is that somebody 150 years ago signed something. Can we just go with that?
Ow, Adam, why'd you prick my finger? Where are you going with that vial of blood?
My mom would always be like, and then my grandmother would go, hey, it's true. And she'd go, well, okay, you say it's true. It's like, why can't we just go along with it? No, we're not going to get busted. And it's not like I'm using it on a credit report where it needs to be checked into and I could get into trouble or anything. It's just, it's a nice little story. Can we just leave it at that? No, not going to let her get away with it. So she's out here. She's just Los Angeles way back. And then the grandpa is from Hungary, but he's the step-grandpa. The first guy was, short order cook who walked here from San Francisco or something. We don't even know who we don't know who he was.
And you weren't good enough for their worst Tupperware.
They didn't like me leaving with Tupperware. That's another one.
That's a whole other problem.
Yes. All right. Do we get, we all caught up on our depressing stories and why?
I'm satisfied. Yeah.
Why are we burning the calories, people? Why? So weird. All right, let's do a little.
That's not the direction I expected any of this to go.
I know. I just think about it every once in a while. Like I get, like I said, we were poor, so it's just you couldn't have certain things because it cost money. But this one's free. Why are we burning all the calories on bumming everyone out? Mm-hmm. It's a weird, weird thing. All right, let's do a little news.
All right.
Should we, Gina Grad?
Let's do it.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Showbiz, Congress, tech news, sports news, world news. Give me news with Gina Grad. Weird shit out of Florida. Sex surveys, Obama. Need news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Donald Trump showed no sign of backing away from some of his more controversial statements on what was billed as the Commander-in-Chief Forum on Wednesday night. During the televised forum that focused on national security issues, Trump defended his praise of Russian President Vladimir Putin and even doubled down by saying that he's more praiseworthy than President Obama. Here's a clip from Trump.
When referring to a comment that Putin made about you, I think he called you a brilliant leader. You said it's always a great honor to be so nicely complimented by a man so highly respected within his country and beyond.
Well, he does have an 82% approval rating, according to the different pollsters, who, by the way, some of them are based right here. Look,
he's also a guy who annexed Crimea, invaded Ukraine, supports Assad in Syria, supports Iran, is trying to undermine our influence in key regions of the world. And according to our intelligence community, probably is the main suspect for the hacking of the DNC computers.
Well, nobody knows that for a fact, but do you want me to start naming some of the things that President Obama does?
But do you want to be complimented by that former KGB officer?
Well, I think when he calls me brilliant, I'll take the compliment, okay?
Good
name. This is good.
I kind of respect that.
I had 24 hours, 14 were like on a plane over the last 24 hours. I flew in private to New York, although my grandma just calls it a mini plane. Want to know
that was
why
your almost
I
real
couldn't
plane.
Afford yeah. JetBlue. Yeah. Want to know what the problem was.
A Buddy Holly.
Yeah, aww. Buddy Holly mobile. I said, I flew in, so there's like just conversation and drinks on the plane. I don't do that. Got to get the Wi-Fi thing. It's like, here you are.
Enjoy
Have
it.
A drink. Enjoy some conversation. Landed, a little more drink and a little more conversation. Went and walked through Manhattan and met James Baby Doll Dixon for a great Italian meal at one of those classic Manhattan-y places. Walked out. Got back on the plane, listened to a little Toad the Wet Sprocket, and JFK came back on the plane. I made it through 24 hours of no Trump,
no
Hillary,
no. That's got to feel good.
Somebody shot a polar bear and everyone's going nuts. It was nice. It's like it's sort
jealous.
Of
totally agree.
It's everyone needs it. You need to look. Go get on that private jet. Yeah. It's only $35,000 one way.
Yeah.
No, Cheapskate. Go somewhere for just 24 hours. Just nothing.
It's a great idea.
I didn't even think about it, but God, did I not miss anything? Yeah. And do not think that you have to be tuned in. All like, hey, go to the Italian restaurant. Don't look at your phone. Get on the plane. Don't punch into the Wi-Fi. Yep. Just go sit there and watch a stupid movie. Yes.
It's a great idea.
And that was Glenn Phillips. Of course, we know him from Toad the Wet Sprocket back in 2016.
Yeah, I love it whenever he comes on. I love that Adam has these bizarre relationships with different musicians you wouldn't expect him to know or appreciate. And he can just pull them out of left field. It's like, you like Toad the Wet Sprocket? He's like, yeah, and then he'll explain to you why their music's great. And it's like, oh, it is great. I think he even convinced Damashek, who was an early doubter.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Adam is very well known to let everybody know what kind of music he prefers, and he tries to show you why. I mean,
really?
I never thought about it. All you have to do is be in a room with him for 20 minutes.
Oh, I don't spend a lot of time in rooms with him.
Well, you don't even need to. Just turn the podcast, scrub it around, the little scrubber thing around, and you'll probably hit some music talk.
Just press play for a while.
Yeah. All right. We have one more clip for everybody. This one's a special one. It's from 2009. Features you.
Oh, yeah. It does. I wonder who picked this one. My debut episode, Adam Carolla Show 188. It was the Adam Carolla podcast at the time. This was, from back in October of 2009? No, this has got to be older than that. I think it was November 2009. It was one of the two. But nonetheless, I still got to be on the Adam Carolla Show, I don't know, 5 or 6 times, and this is the first time I did it. Check it out.
And very excited to see once again my super fan, Giovanni.
Nice.
Those of you who listen to the radio show would remember Giovanni calling in from Hawaii, the most miserable man in Maui. And I know you weren't on Maui, but I used alliteration there. Now back in Chicago.
In Chicago. I was from Seattle originally.
Right. Oh, sorry. So give us your vital stats. How old are you? What do you do for a living? So on and so forth.
Yeah, 26 in a couple weeks here. I worked for an airline since I was 19. Been a fan of yours since 96 when Loveline premiered.
Wow.
Premiered like a week after my 13th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And all my friends were like obsessed with, you know, getting high and drunk all the time. And I was right in there with them, but then I found the show and it was just the best thing in my life.
On the radio or on the TV?
TV show. Then I found the Superior Radio Show like about a year later.
The TV show was in 96?
96, November 17th, I think, was the premiere.
Wow. There you go.
And they would
now
do like,
I know.
Yeah, they do like four-hour marathons on the weekends and shit. They just blow through those episodes.
Yeah. So you discovered that at 13. It had a profound impact on your life.
Yep.
And you've been an Adam Carolla fan ever since.
Exactly.
Now, you work for the airline, so you can travel.
Yeah, yeah. When I was 19, I got a job at the airline. And there's like this whole, it's kind of sucking now, it's ruining it, but there was a sweet spot where I essentially flew first class around the planet for nothing.
Really?
The whole time I brought Loveline with me everywhere. Just listened. It was right after, it was like 2003, so it was right after you made your first couple trips to Europe, the time you brought Donnie and all that.
Sure.
So like the whole time I'm hearing about you like going through Europe the first time, I'm going through Europe, and I had you and Drew with me everywhere.
And what do you do for the airlines?
I work in a giant office. I start out in their reservations, and then I kind of work my way up. Basically, if you went to Hoffman Travel, never left.
Oh.
And I was actually associated with an airline.
Hoffman Travel.
Wow.
Donnie had a job at Hoffman Travel, and he got me a job at Hoffman Travel. That's it was literally Donnie. You know, please stop me if I'm exaggerating at all. Me in an office with 25 bitches. Now, I'll be kind.
There was a couple.
21 bitches, 25 women.
Yeah.
Well, actually, 9 cunts, 13 bitches, and then 3 that just didn't care. And then me, right?
Yes.
I wouldn't call any of them nice.
No, everybody was into their own world. But the funny part was, once again, Adam with no confidence yet. Zero confidence. So these women are running him around.
Yeah, he's a bitch boy.
And they're like, where's Merv Griffin's tickets? I put them on the table. And I was getting yelled at. And it was literally me and 25 scary women in one place. I got fired after I got arrested on my motorcycle. But that was my Hoffman Travel experience. Yeah. Imagine me at 19 working at a travel agency.
Yeah.
I could barely write my fucking name on a chalkboard.
Well, it was either that or carpet cleaning.
Yeah, well, I went from carpet cleaning to that. But anyway, so now you're here. Now, why are you here, Giovanni?
To interview you, kind of, I guess. Just
okay.
See what happens.
You're going to interview me.
Well, you know, whatever happens, fuck it. I'll just I'm gonna throw some stuff your way. There's a bunch of stuff from Loveline and the Corolla show that never got resolved. I guess we go back to the morning show first. This was more recent. On the air, the last week of the show.
These are questions that people who listen might want answers to and never were provided
answers. Yeah, lots of fans will like this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On the morning show, you promised to light your farts in the last week.
I did.
You promised me twice, and they promised two other callers, a lady and a dude. And you said you swore today you'd do it. I asked Chris about it at the charity event earlier this year, and he said you're too big time. And I argued with him. I said, they're not too big time to light your farts.
Yeah. Well, it's funny when you talk about traveling through Europe. One of the things we did was pretty much just light farts all the way through Europe.
I was thinking you could do a video, light the farts, put it online for $1, farts for Brian.
Wow.
Lit farts for Brian. Lit farts ball Brian.
Donnie, we do have some footage from Europe, do we not?
Yes, we do.
We definitely could.
I can keep people from pirating it.
We definitely could put lighting farts for Bald Brian. Yeah, people don't. Yeah, you're right. I owe a lit fart. I'll only do it in jeans.
As I told on the morning show, I said, make sure Adam wears jeans. Brian, you bring the Bic. Teresa can be the light operator because she didn't want to be anywhere near it.
Yeah, you got to get the lights. It's almost like a slideshow at noon. It just doesn't play. You have to go get the lights and do it. And still controversy swirling over who was holding the cigarette. But again, Donnie and I have lit a cigarette off a fart.
The oldest telling we have, the first time you told it, it was Donnie lighting. But you've done both over the years. So we don't know. It's probably both. Well, I'm thinking you're both done.
I argue with him that it was my fart, and then he argues that it was his fart. So
we have only one recording of it that we've managed to save. It's with you and Drew. And Drew is so disgusted at first. This is like 98, so this is early on in the Drew-Adam love affair. Mm-hmm. And by the middle of the show, he's amazed. And he's like begging you to do more. Like you're like Bill Nye the Science Guy doing tricks for him. And he's having you shove lights. He's like, oh my God, it's huge. It's blue.
Oh, so you actually did do it on Love.
Yeah, you guys have the file on the archive I gave Adam. Well, actually, I gave you another one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
maybe it was a storytelling. You actually lit one.
Oh, no, he did them on air. I have
no recollection.
And Drew laughed, of course.
He did not laugh.
At first, that's disgusting, but then
1998,
he's laughing.
Barbara Bush would laugh her ass off if you lit a fart in front of her. You can't not laugh.
You can't.
Chicks, by the way, are blown away by it. Like, they can't imagine that flame. Well, you power out of flame ass coming from your body. You know what I mean?
It is bizarre.
It's awesome. It's
amazing.
Well, anyway, all right. Fart lighting. Yes.
Fart lighting. And then, let's see here. What's we got? Okay, Good Times LL. Remember in Loveline, the Good Times thing came up like throughout 98, 97. You were obsessed with the lyric, hanging in a something.
Hanging in a jar line, hanging in a bread line, hanging in a soup line. Yeah.
You heard hanging in a jar.
Keeping our head above water. Yeah. Making away. Yeah, and then
hanging in. Oh, yeah, it was hanging in a jawn. But it sounded like they said hanging in a jar line.
Yeah, okay. I have a definitive answer for you on this.
Okay, because this is the theme from the song Good Times.
Okay, yeah. I just got this batch of tapes, and on this batch, there was like 10 shows in a row where you did it. And every time the guests had to bust your balls, tell you, no, you're wrong with your assumption, your original one was hanging in a jiving, but then you said it doesn't make sense, so hanging in a jar line was what you came up with as well. So you had hanging in a jiving and hanging in a jar line.
It sounded like hanging in a jar line is what they were saying, but that doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
So hanging in a jiving
was your other one. That's what else you said. You really said maybe it's this, and then all the callers came in with the hanging in the jaw and the chow line.
Right.
And even on like Chappelle's show, they did this definitive Ask a Black Guy bit.
Right.
And they go, oh, well, it must be chow line because we're so poor in the 70s. Right. They all... No, if Drew said it would have to be the original singer-songwriter to give the definitive answer, I found the guy in line. The answer is hanging in and jiving or hanging and a jiving. He's not sure, but it's
so
one of those two.
I was sort of right.
You're 100% right from the get-go. Because you said before jarline, you said hanging and jiving.
Yeah, hanging in and jiving.
Yeah.
Right, so, but they pronounced it jarline.
So you were right along.
Thank you, Giovanni. Thank you for that vindication.
And we're still missing...
keeping me up at nights, by the way.
Yeah, it's keeping me up at night.
And that was the debut of Superfan Giovanni, at least on the Adam Carolla podcast.
Yeah. It was a really cool, like, full circle moment where it's like, I helped on the radio show, started as a caller, then I found out the podcast was existing before everybody else in the audience, and I was super bummed out, had to process it by myself. And then Mike Chaffee was panicking to get the show posted that weekend, and I was like telling everybody, we're going to need a bigger boat. That's literally what I was saying. We're going to need a bigger boat. We're going to need a bigger boat. We're going to have at least 250. We're going to have 290. And I was like preparing everybody for how massive the popularity is going to be. And of course it was. And it just all kind of snowballed from there.
That's right. And now here we are. Thank you, Superfan Giovanni. All right, that'll do for Carolla Classics. The Adam Carolla Show returns tomorrow. We have Sean Penn slated. So make sure to tune in. Carolla Classics returns this Saturday. So make sure to subscribe to Carolla Classics, the podcast, support our sponsors, and we will see you then. My name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get it on.